Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow. Thanks for joining me tonight. I have a fantastic episode. Tonight I have Attila joining me from Moonlark Media, and Attila is currently filming a documentary about the Australian Yowie called Track. He comes on the show to tell me some of his more hair-raising encounters and how he got involved in the paranormal field. But before we get into that, let's talk about some iTunes 5-star ratings and reviews. Each week, I read out a new 5-star review, so if you want your review read out, simply jump on iTunes and leave a 5-star review and let me know what you enjoy about the show, and I might just read it out on the next episode. This one's titled Love It, and it comes in from Mark Macken MacDonald from Australia. Fantastic local Australian content. Great interview style. Look forward to listening every week. Absolutely love it. Thank you. So thank you for those kind words, Mark. Also, for those who have been asking how to support the show, I have now set up a Patreon for the show. We have two different levels of support, a single dollar pledge and a $3 pledge that gets you a few goodies each month. And as a little bonus, the first 25 $3 supporters will get a one-of-a-kind badge as a thank you gift. So if you want to help support the show, you can find links to that in our show notes. And finally, if you want to chat to other listeners of the show, simply jump on Facebook and search for the Believe Paranormal and UFO fan group. But that's enough of me talking. Let's get into Attila's encounters. Tonight, I want to welcome Attila to the show. And Attila is actually making a documentary called Track, and it's all about the Australian Yowie. Attila, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Cade. Appreciate it.
No, I'm very excited to have you on because you're an expert in the paranormal field, because not only are you on the search for the Yowie, you've had a huge amount of experience in paranormal fields with ghosts, with UFOs. You've kind of got a blanket over everything.
I don't know about experts, Cade, but I certainly have had my fair share of experiences, mate. Being involved, with this whole paranormal, phenomena, I guess, if you want to call it, or the search for, or being an observer of the paranormal, I've been doing it for almost 20 years now. When I refer to the paranormal, I mean, above normal, so that could mean anything from UFOs to Yowies to, spiritual type encounters. This has been quite a plethora of experiences over the years. And I think I have a lot to thank, for the people that I've been working with, and especially with my family, and also, the content that we've been filming over the years. I think that's also been major draw card for these experiences.
What got you into the paranormal, Atella?
Hey, look, it's quite a complex story. I was a very little kid when I first had my very first paranormal experience. And when I say first, it's the one I believe to be the earliest, because I'm pretty sure I've had experiences before that. But, my memory obviously has been clouded by something. Going back as far as, I guess, being the age of six, I remember we were leasing this old house in Bathurst on a battle axe block. I remember it distinctly, had a big tree in the back. And the back room was my bedroom, and one day I was quite ill, and I was obviously at home from school, and there was a particular part of the room that had very little light. My room didn't get much light because I had a big tree at the back. But I remember actually feeling very, very uneasy, and this darker part of the room just kept on getting darker and darker. And I remember this old lady and an old man coming out of the dark sort of corner of the room. And they would walk up to me, and I was so horrified that I was frozen. And they just basically walked into the hallway. And I believe this happened to me quite a few times. That was, I believe, my very first encounter with the paranormal. I don't think I had anything until we moved to Europe. And we actually bought an old house there that was built by a Jewish couple in the 1920s. And I spent about 4 years in Europe when I was a young kid. And that house had its own story, and it obviously presented itself on a number of occasions to me.
What do you think those apparitions were that when you're a child?
The way I remember it is they were dressed in clothing that obviously was from a different time. I really don't know, to be honest. They could have been the former owners, and I remember seeing them quite clearly. And I remember being horrified and telling my parents, what I've seen. They obviously didn't believe me at the time. But I really don't know what they were. One thing I do believe, though, that happened is that we all of a sudden packed up and left one day and moved into a unit. And I believe that these people, whoever they were, made themselves known to my parents. But my parents being from Central Europe, they were very superstitious and, anything like that, they would have, kept it to themselves and not told anyone, even their own son. So that's why they refused to believe my story.
Have you ever brought that up with them since?
They're no longer with us. My mother passed in 2000 and my father in about 2004. So I didn't have a chance to bring it up. But if they were still around, I definitely would be quizzing them. There's no doubt about that.
And with that first experience, did that open your mind to I guess, more paranormal events? Or was that something that you started to become more aware of?
Yeah, it's a good question. It is possible because it's when you're a kid and you start to think back as an adult, you do question yourself quite frequently. Did I really see this, or was it my imagination? But I know when I think about that one event, it's almost like having this feeling in the pit of your stomach that it was real, it actually happened. It's quite possible, but I honestly believe that I did have previous experiences. It's just that I don't remember them, and that's what's puzzling and bugging me a lot. But I do believe that it actually was a catalyst to what was about to happen throughout my life.
Because we've had a handful of paranormal investigators on this show, and they usually say that there's a one event that kind of happens and it almost opens the spectrum where they can, well, I guess they're a little bit more sensitive to paranormal events. So a lot of psychics who've come on this show say that once they open their mind that little bit more, they have a lot more contact with spirits from other realms and things like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think I just saw the world completely differently after that encounter. I think I looked at our reality in a completely different way. And I think maybe that has a lot to do with being a little bit more observant and being able to pick up on the smallest signs and things that other people may not necessarily pick up on.
So let's fast forward a couple of years. How did you get into the topic of the Yowie?
Well, that was quite an interesting story. I was actually involved in the creation of a UFO society back in 2000 with a colleague of mine at the time. And around 2001, there was a massive UFO flap around the Sydney area. And there was also a lot of reports originating from the mountains, the Blue Mountains region.
So we get so many people contacting us about UFO sightings in the 2000s around the Blue Mountains.
That's correct. It was quite a significant time, especially 2001, because that's when I actually got to have one of my most profound experiences, but that was over in the Northern Beaches. But the whole Yowie thing basically came upon, it was a very subtle encounter. In fact, a group of people who were a member of the society at the time went on this, I guess you'd call it an expedition, to the very edge of Narrow Neck. And we decided to camp there overnight, or actually a few nights. And at one point in time, just after sunset, you know, we split up in two groups, and there was a fellow and a lady who decided to stay back at base camp. And we ventured over to the other side of this plateau and had a wonderful sort of view of the Megalong Valley. But after a while, we decided to venture back because we didn't want to leave these guys alone just in case, you know, there was something going on and we wouldn't hear it. And we found out that they were in their tent. And we started quizzing, well, guys, what's going on? You know, how come you're in your tent? And they didn't want to come out. And basically what they told us is that they heard this horrific scream, but it was very loud. And I'm completely puzzled as to how we didn't hear this. And then apparently that scream was followed by what sounded like a tree being ripped out of the ground. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna walk up beyond the camp a little bit and just sort of stand there and just listen. And that's what I did. And about a few seconds into my sort of solitary observation in pitch black, this rock got thrown at me. Now, when I say rock, it was probably the size of, you know, of a 10-cent coin, but it actually hit me in the chest. And there was no overhang, no nothing. And I thought to myself, yep, okay, we're not alone. So,
wow.
I decided to sort of go back to base camp and told the guys, look, you know, there's something out here, you know. But I knew very little about, I mean, I knew about Bigfoot because, look, when I was a kid, I loved watching documentaries about Bigfoot and everything else. But I didn't sort of get into, I guess, the apparent culture and their behavior and territories and all that kind of stuff until later on. Until I had a much more, I guess, intense experience. And that wasn't until, I guess, 2006, when, again, we were on another expedition on a different side of the mountain. And one night, you know, we were basically sitting off the edge of the cliff just observing the Burrabung Valley up there at the Blue Mountains looking for signs of aerial phenomena. And this couple comes out who are part of the group, and they said, look, you know, we heard this really horrible screaming sound. It sounded like a woman being tortured. Now, to give you an idea, we were in a very isolated area, and this was in September. So at that particular time, it was quite fresh at night. And then we started discussing this, and this large rock, and it was probably almost the size of a soccer ball, landed right between us, almost hitting one of the crew members.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And again, there was no overhang, so we were on the highest point there. So there was no way where a rock could have got dislodged. This thing was actually thrown because as it hit the ground, it shattered. So we're all standing up, looking around and obviously trying to find out what the hell's going on here. We were up quite late because we weren't comfortable going back into our tents, because if you're in a tent and a rock like that gets thrown at you and hits you in the head, well, it's all over.
Yeah, you're done for.
So the following day, basically what we did is the ladies decided to stay back at base camp, and they were virtually on the edge of this cliff, which was about a 20 or 30 meter vertical drop, while the guys decided to sort of go in this experience of the scrub and see if we could find signs of what was stirring there at night, because we kind of had a suspicion that there must have been something here, like a Bigfoot or a Yowie or whatever we want to call them. And obviously at one point in time, we had this wet dog smell as well at one night. So we thought, right, let's investigate the area, see if we can find any signs. And we were in walkie-talkie range with the base camp, and then we get this distress call coming from the ladies, and they're saying that another rock got thrown at them, but this time it wasn't behind them, it came from underneath, so from down the bottom of the cliff. And this rock was probably the size of a tennis ball, and it got thrown up something 20 or 30 metres and almost hit these ladies. So we decided to go back to base camp, and from there on up until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that's when it started getting dark. We were debating whether or not we're going to spend another night there because it was now getting dangerous. So right in the final hour, just as sunset, we said, that's it, we're packing up, we're going to hit the track. And that's what we did. So we packed up our tents and backpacks full, and we decided to hike through the fern forest. It was quite dense. I mean, this is off the beaten track. So, you know, the hike out of there to where we were dropped off, which was basically like a small parking area, but it's still dirt road. It's about 20 kilometres in from Benjamin Road. That hike was still about 40 minutes to an hour away. So we decided to pack up, lights on, headlamps on, and just march through, you know, the wilderness there, through the scrub, through the fern forest. And we're marching through these. I mean, I can still remember the trees there were massive. I mean, I think they're blue gums. But what actually caught our attention, that was something was pursuing us. But it was running. It wasn't running. It was basically moving with us. But this was, Kate, this was like a bulldozer going through the bloody forest, mate. Whatever it was massive, and it was keeping pace with us. And it came to a point where we decided to sort of speed up the process. One of the guys actually, I think it was an anxiety attack, and she decided, I mean, we had to stop because she became immobile because of fear. And then we ended up sort of, I don't know how the hell we got ourselves out of there, but we ended up dragging ourselves out. But these things were hitting the trees. So it's a classical wood knocks that were going on. It was basically being herded out. That's the only way I can describe it.
Far out. That's terrifying.
Oh, it was. It was probably one of the most terrifying experiences I've had out in the scrub. And to be honest, there came a point where you think, am I going to make it out of here in one piece? How are we going to make it out of here alive? And eventually we did end up getting onto the dirt road. And these things just basically walked back into the forest after we got to that area, that clearing. And we basically spent the next 2 hours trying to find a mobile phone signal to ring up one of the lady's husbands, who was quite a lovely gentleman, and he lived about an hour or 2 hours away from there. And we rang him up and told him what happened, and he was there, quick smart to pick us up and take us away. So that was quite a horrifying experience, and I think that really sort of started my interest—not an interest to pursue it, but an interest nonetheless. And that obviously gradually grew into this absolute fascination that I have, to almost point of obsession, for, you know, to try to be an observer of the Australian Bigfoot, the Yowie.
So after that absolutely terrifying encounter, was there absolutely zero doubt in your mind that this is a real creature?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It had to be something, Kate. I mean, there is no way in hell that even a large human would have been able to do that. I mean, this thing was, whatever it was more than one, mind you. These were walking through the forest unhindered. It was like a bulldozer going through a forest, just clearing the path for itself. There was hardly any obstacles. And these things, and no matter which way we panned our lights, we could not see them. But mind you, they kept their distance from us, but it was loud and clear what they were doing. And there was no doubt in our minds that we were faced with something that I would refer to as a forest giant. I mean, you know, you hear these stories about legendary creatures in Scandinavia, about trolls and the likes. And you know, I mean, are these, you know, basically the same thing? Are we dealing with, you know, Bigfoot or Yowies that are the same? I mean, this must have been huge to do what they did.
Do you think you wandered into their territory? Because they sound incredibly hostile.
I think we did. This was an area that was off the beaten track, so you wouldn't have had many visitors there at all, if any. Mind you, the location there was quite a beautiful spot, and probably has one of the best views there of the Burrabirang. I honestly believe that it's quite possible that we walked into a territory where we weren't supposed to. But then again, you know, I mean, there could have been road signs there that I recognise today that I wouldn't have recognised back then, but we just didn't see them, or we didn't recognise them, like I said.
And what's some of those signs? Because obviously you're much more, I guess, travelled in the sense of Yowie exploration.
Mm.
Do you mind kind of telling some of those signs that you think you may have missed?
Look, Kate, fairly recently we've actually bumped into quite a few of these signs, to be honest, and some other things as well, which will be in the documentary. But the simple things that people actually pick up on, and even the natives talk about that. When I'm talking about natives, I'm talking about Native American people and the Indigenous people in Australia.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And they seem to be referring to very similar signposts or road signs, if you like, trees that are basically, you know, ripped out or snapped about a quarter of the way up and placed on top of each other, and some really elaborate structures that are placed together. And, you know, if you're not familiar with these things, I mean, you could be hiking in the wilderness and not even pick it up. You would just think, you just basically walk past it and not recognize it. And it's quite possible that these signs would have been there, almost like arrows and signposts and, like I said, elaborate, you know, formations, the way tree trunks are placed and sticks are placed. And you can tell now that where trees, healthy trees, are being snapped a quarter of the way up and placed on top of each other. It's quite interesting and fascinating, some of the things that we've recently picked up on. And I think that these are the things that I missed back in the day.
It's absolutely fascinating.
We have an interesting country. the wilderness, I mean, look, Kate, people who say that they're bored is I just can't fathom that, because there is so much there for us to even discover. You know, there's so much more out there than meets the eye. And we can spend most of our lives, you know, living in the noise of society and not recognize what's really going on in the background. And I think there are a few people out there who are now starting to recognize that there are more things out there than what we're being told.
Well, absolutely. We're seeing now that we're getting what almost seems to be UFO disclosure in the mass media. It's no longer a thing that is kind of shunned in the public. It's really coming to open light. And that kind of brings me to my next question for you there is, do you think the government knows about the Yowie or the Bigfoot?
My gut instinct and some of the stories that I've heard makes me believe that that is the case. There are a lot of theories out there as to why this is. I mean, I'm obviously very interested in these theories, and some of them sound quite legit to me. And one of the things is that obviously if the government decides to disclose the fact that we have 10-foot-tall giants, you know, ruling the national parks, that can have a fairly hard economic impact on our society. You would get people who have properties that back onto national parks would want to move. You wouldn't want people would just wouldn't want to go camping in the parks anymore. So you're looking at an effect on tourism as well as things like the fisheries industry, the camping industry, the four-wheel drive industry. So you would have a snowball effect. And I think that the economy would be affected quite heavily if there was disclosure that these creatures or these life forms do exist. So I think there's much more to it than what meets the eye, and there's a lot of theories out there that can actually happen. And look, I think that it's quite a valid argument.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've never actually thought of it from that point of view, but I mean, it almost gives credence to it of keeping it silent, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's like the Orson Welles production of War of the Worlds. I mean, the effect that had on the people when that got aired in, I think it was in the 1920s. I mean, people went out with shotguns and started shooting one another, and it was absolute mayhem because people thought that we were being attacked by aliens from Mars. So obviously we've grown a lot since then, but nonetheless, you know, there are people out there that would still cause, you know, panic, and one thing can lead to another. You could get people coming out there with guns and trying to hunt these animals down. I mean, you just don't know to what extent this impact would go. I think what the government's trying to do, and if they are doing this, is to keep it under wraps for good reasons, and I don't blame them for that.
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely fair point, and it's a great point of view. So thanks for actually raising that. Have you had any other encounters that were maybe as aggressive as the one that you originally had?
Yowie encounters.
Yeah.
Definitely. There was another encounter that we had back in 2013. We also had one over at the Pilligas, which was another story altogether. But we were in the Blue Mountains again, and I was there with a small group of friends, including my daughter. And it was quite an interesting night because we were there, I think it was around April 2013, so it was getting cold. And these encounters, generally, the way I've observed it over the years, they generally happen during the colder months. And a lot of the guys will actually tell you that too, that a lot of the encounters actually seem to be concentrated around the colder months. So we went to an area that, again, it was off the beaten track, and essentially what was going on is that we could hear heavy footsteps coming from all directions, from within the actual forest, within the thickets, and obviously it alerted us, and we're looking everywhere, and I had a video camera with me, so here I am panning left to right, and the frustration is that it feels like that somebody is or something is upon you right there in front of you, yet you're not seeing anything. And it just completely puzzled us to how this is actually possible, because it just sounds like it. I mean, maybe the acoustics are such in the forest that the noise travels in such a way that it makes you believe that something large is right next to you. And then effectively what happened afterwards is we picked up this growl. It was a very low-pitched guttural growl. And that's when we thought, this is it. We're about to have our encounter. And the guys that were with me were getting very uneasy. And I said, look, this is what we're here for. Let's just let it happen organically. Let's just have it happen naturally, because this is what's happening. This is what we're here for. And it didn't come to that, funny enough. And what had actually happened was the wind picked up. And as the wind picked up, the movement started happening. And as the wind died down, there was no movement whatsoever. So after a while, things got very, very quiet. And we started getting very, very comfortable. And then it wasn't until the wind started picking up, all of a sudden these branches and rocks got thrown over our heads, just like, they were basically projectiles, like missiles, but they weren't hitting us. They were going past us. And I believe that was a warning sign at the time for us to leave the area. But obviously we're at awe at this, and we're thinking, okay, well, you know, it's starting again. Let's just sit and wait and see what happens. And again, what actually happened was a large rock basically landed, I think, about a meter from where I was sitting. And that was the time when we thought, okay, now this is getting too real. We need to get up and leave, because the next rock might actually physically hit us and we won't be able to get out of here in one piece. So as we collecting our equipment and everything else, we're walking out, and as we're doing this, smaller rocks get thrown at us. So obviously we're being encouraged to hurry up. So we're hiking down, we got to the track, and as we're walking, we decide to stop and obviously look in towards the thickets with our torches. And then what happened next was quite incredible. Whatever this thing was, it was very heavy. It was pounding the ground with extreme force, with such force that you can actually feel the ground vibrate under your feet. and it was throwing debris in the air. So it's almost like, you know, a it's almost like something that a silverback gorilla would do to warn people who are intruding in their territory to get up and leave. So this wasn't this was an act of aggression. This was a display telling us, leave now or I will get angry or I will get aggressive. And that's basically code what we heard. It was something thumping the ground, hitting the ground with great force and throwing leaves and debris in the air, and the occasional grunt that got, you know, obviously emitted from that, which wasn't very loud, but we could hear it. So that was it. We were out of there. And we were followed from the top end and then from the lower end as well. So we were basically escorted out. And it's not uncommon for that to happen. And that was, I guess, that was another aggressive encounter that we had. But when I say aggressive, I don't think that this was an intentional aggression. I think that we outstayed our welcome, and because we didn't leave, they basically encouraged us with a little bit of persuasion to get out of there.
Have you ever pushed that limit?
Look, out of respect, I haven't. It's a fine line. It really is, because you want to push the limit as a journalist, as a filmmaker, you want to push the limit because you want to see what's on the other side of the hill, right, as a figure of speech. And you just want to keep pushing yourself. But at the same time, where do you draw the line? You know, when does it become unethical or indecent? Because I solely believe that we are dealing with real life forms here. These creatures have been here, I honestly believe, have been here far longer than humans. And I also do know that a lot of the indigenous tribes will talk to you and tell you that there was a time when they did live side by side. They had the Yowies or the Bigfoot had their own designated territories, and the tribes had their own, and there was an unwritten contract that they wouldn't encroach on each other's boundary. And as Europeans came in, that treaty obviously got violated. And obviously, by doing that, we are causing these creatures to do what they're doing.
It's fair enough. And, I mean, you also have to look after your safety in those scenarios, because at the end of the day, content is content, but it means nothing if you're not getting out of there with it.
Yeah, then it becomes a lost tape story, right? So, I think that's the other thing, because when you are with other people, you it's not just your own safety that you've got to think about. You've got to think about everybody else's safety. And when you have large rocks being thrown within close proximity to you, that is a dead set sign for you to get out of there now, because the next one will probably hit you or hit somebody else. And considering the size and the force that these things were thrown, one hit would take a person out very easily, no doubt whatsoever.
Now, just before we wrap up tonight there, Attila, have you seen one of these things in the flesh?
Not face to face. I have seen large shadows. We have one of the ones that I actually saw was back in earlier, probably about 2003, which is, again, was up in the Blue Mountains. And I was walking back to the car after a night watch, and the rest of the crew were sort of sitting there just sort of observing. Well, I want to go back to the vehicle to get something from the car. And as I was walking back, I did see this large human shadow standing there. I mean, it was massive. But when I say human, it had a form of an upright human being. It was anthropomorphic. So, and that's when I sort of stopped and went back and told the guys, look, there's something out here. And obviously when I got back, it was already gone. The other one that I saw was a massive, again, anthropomorphic creature, you know, up two-legged, upright, walking across the road over near the Pilligas, a dirt road. So that's about as far as I've ever come across of actually seeing one. I haven't actually seen one face-to-face, not yet anyway, but I do know people who have.
And I just have one final question for you. What do you think Bigfoot is?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. Funny enough, that's a question that I ask people when I interview them for the documentary. What do we think that Bigfoot is? If I had to guess, I would guess that even though they look very human-like, or I guess a composition between a human being and a great ape, I do believe that they are a species on themselves. I honestly do believe that it's quite possible. It is easy to mistake, you know, or for us to actually, I wouldn't say mistake, but for us actually, for us to try to, you know, categorize or reference these creatures to something that we know today, and that happens to be either an ape or a human being. So that's where I guess a lot of people believe that that could be, you know, some form of, you know, species of our evolution, or that could have evolved completely independently. I honestly believe that they're a species on their own, and there are some quite interesting stories and theories from people who have actually spent a lot of time, in fact, most of their lives researching this, as to what they believe it is. But yeah, I honestly believe that there are species on their own as to what. I think that it's unidentified. I don't think there's anything quite like them apart from what other people have witnessed and observed throughout the world, like over in the States, the Sasquatch and Bigfoot and the skunk ape and Garang Pandek and other creatures that people have seen, like the Yeti. I think that they are species within themselves, but quite diverse at the same time.
And do you give much credence to the thought process that it might be something that is paranormal? Because we have had a fair few people get in contact with us where they've said they've seen this creature, the Yowie, the Bigfoot, walk right in front of them and then literally just fade away.
Mm. It's funny enough, because I've heard of people talk about this. And when I say people, I'm talking about people who come from a tribal community. And they will tell you that these creatures are highly spiritual. And by that, they don't mean that they sit on top of a rock and meditate. I think that that they have the capabilities of masking themselves. And I think that they're so connected with the environment. You know, I think that the only thing that I could sort of compare that to would be shamans or shapeshifters, if you like, from tribal communities. And I think that they're so in tune with themselves and with the environment that they're capable of achieving that high level of consciousness, if you wish, that, you know, that they're capable of doing things that we can only, you know, we only see in movies and you know, fantasy novels, or reading fantasy novels.
And that's, and it's fair enough, because at the end of the day, no one really knows what these creatures are.
Absolutely.
And they could just have some sort of advanced camouflage techniques that they've obviously, I think that it's something that they've, I guess, evolved into.
Mm.
And they've been in this form that they have forever. I mean, you look at humans and we've really only been, I guess, evolved through technology, where this creatures have only evolved through nature. So with that, you have a look at how much we rely on technology to do what we do these days. And, you know, you look into the future that will probably become almost one with technology. Whereas a Yowie or a Bigfoot, their technology is the wilderness.
That is right.
So it goes hand in hand to go, maybe this thing is just connected to nature in a way that will be connected to technology.
That seems to make perfect sense, Kate. It really does, because I think that, you know, with when you talk to people from tribal communities, even doesn't matter if it's from Australia or from anywhere in the world, they will tell you things that you know, that I believe that we as a society lost thousands of years ago because of the progression of technology and the way I think that we have lost our way when it comes to, you know, this whole connection with the earth, with nature. And I'm not trying to be a weed smoking hippie here. I'm just, you know, I think when you spend enough time out in the wilderness and spend enough time talking to people around the world and those people who come from tribal communities, it you sit down and you think, wow, that makes a lot of sense. You know, that really makes a lot of sense. But mate, as you say, you know, it's still a theory. You know, I mean, we can. This is a topic that you can argue all day and all night. But at the end of the day, we really don't know what we're dealing with. We can only guess. And I think we need to start asking the right questions, and maybe one day we'll get the right answers.
Well, Attila, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been absolutely fantastic. The encounters that you've had are absolutely amazing. And just before we wrap up, Do you mind telling the people where they can find some of the documentaries that you've produced?
Sure. Cade, look, probably Amazon Prime is probably the best platform to find some of our recent work. There's a production or a documentary that we shot over in Europe, and we actually went to the Ukraine and shot over in Chernobyl. And then we went to Central Europe in Slovakia. We filmed over there in a castle that was owned by Elizabeth Báthory, who was known to be the female Dracula of her time. I mean, that's another story altogether. But we actually visited a lot of these historical places over there, and that documentary is called Ghosts of Europe, and that's on Amazon Prime. And we also have a series called Paranormal Investigators Uncut, which is more of a journalistic view of the paranormal community in Australia, people who have had experiences and who wanted to basically talk about their experiences and their theories and what they do and how they pursue the unexplained. So there are two, and we've also got some content on a Canadian site which is known as Very Paranormal. So we've got a few things on there. Some of our older content is on there. So, yeah, but primarily Amazon Prime at the moment. That's where we've got most of our content.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFOradio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.